welcome to Anime Audio Commentary. Today I'll be commenting on episode 46 of Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood. If you'd like to watch along, then start watching now. So last we left off, we sort of became aware that the promised day would happen in springtime. So there's a little bit of time, but not much. And in that time, everyone would be wise to make all the preparations they could possibly afford to. So, you know, rather than sit through all those boring preparations, it seems like we've shifted between a couple weeks and a couple months ahead into the future, just to get into the meat of the conflict here. So it seems to me that perhaps the Briggs soldiers have done a little bit of careful smuggling here, considering they have these massive tanks and they're now bringing them over to what appears to be the Rockbell residence. I'd be willing to bet that I know who's inside that tank. Yep, there we have it. Winry is now home safe. And that's a hell of a lot better than she was for the previous however long, you know, held captive either by the military or by hostile forces. Although at the same time, I'd imagine this is going to be fairly melancholy, considering that she's returning home by herself. The Elric brothers, whom she cares deeply about, are off doing dangerous stuff who knows where. You know, it's sort of that dilemma where she's not helpful, therefore she can't help, but at the same time, sitting around doing nothing, you know, makes you feel worse than useless. Man, that was a crisis narrowly averted. Would have been real bad if she just undressed fully, wouldn't it? So I feel like Edward and Greed and company might have done something to sort of declare their presence a bit more forthright than just sort of sitting around in a darkened house with all the drapes pulled. Ah, a cautionary tale about guns indeed. You know, everybody's pointing them willy-nilly. Although, I feel like Ed might better spend his time by putting down the sandwich and getting everybody to stop pointing weapons at each other. Especially considering that they're all effectively on the same side. You know, it doesn't make sense to shoot your allies over a misunderstanding. Especially when trustworthy allies are so few and far between these days. Uh-oh. It seems like there's been a little bit of a misunderstanding. So it seems like something went kind of awry here. Alphonse was with Winry, but he's sort of, I guess, still loaded on the train? Although at the same time, you know, Edward is more trepidatious about going outside and being seen given his fugitive status. So I feel like there's a fair bit of prudence here in that going outside would only incur unnecessary risk. But at the same time, I feel like everybody's kind of risking things anyways. Okay, so it seems like Alphonse is just gonna sit on the train and head to wherever the next destination is. I would have to guess it would be Fort Briggs again, considering all the Briggs troopers. Oh dear, Winry doesn't know about greed and all that. I'd imagine this is going to be a rather big shock to her, especially considering that he's a homunculus, and all previous experience would dictate that a homunculus is bad. So I'd imagine there's going to be some friction here. With Greed being the nominal boss of everybody here, I'd imagine he's swiftly going to start making demands that nobody else is really going to care to, listen to. Alright, so now Ed's hearing about Lior, and what all's going on there. Namely, it being rebuilt. I feel like this is going to lead to some instance where Ed decides to check out Lior for himself and runs smack into Hohenheim. And despite all the previous interactions being, you know, neutral to negative, perhaps they'll actually, like, you know, hit it off on a good note. Because at this point, I really think that the only one who doesn't know that Hohenheim's not really a bad guy is basically Edward himself, and he's really only laboring under that delusion just because of, I guess, his faulty perception as a child. You know, he doesn't really know better, and he didn't really get the chance to know better. You know, I feel like that was a bit of an overreaction here. You know, when Major General Armstrong sent her family out of the country, they just sort of went along with it, but when Ed tries it, he gets smacked in the head with a wrench. I feel like Winry's being a bit unfair here. You know, the least he could do is save some people as a failsafe. You know, obviously his goal is to save everyone, but if things hit the fan, you know, maybe better some people get out alive. So this seems to be a little bit of a conflict between idealism and pragmatism. Man, that ended on a rather sour note. Probably undeserved, too. I feel like one and or both of them probably should have backed down a little bit. Thank you. So, you know, I feel like Edward might be engaging in a bit of a doomed prospect here by talking to Greed about what happens when you want something unrealistic. You know, talking to the guy who wants everything. So despite everything that happened, Edward seems to be intent on leaving things on a good note, you know. We obviously need to continue on our journey to save the day and all that. But, you know, he doesn't want to leave things with a bitter taste in everyone's mouth, you know. Even if he might be telling a little bit of a fib, he's sort of putting on that confidence that Winry was sort of expecting and hoping to see, that, you know, Edward is confident he can save the world, get his body back, all that business. Man, talk about serendipity. Where are Marco and Scar? Oh, it just so happens they're right here. So it seems like everybody's sort of preparing for the promised day in their own kind of way. I kind of have to wonder what precisely Marco's going to do. You know, if anybody has the knowledge to combat the transmutation circle that's going to ruin everything, it would be him. But at the same time, you know, time is limited. If he's going to make, like, a counter-circle, there's only a certain amount of time that they can construct that circle in. And if it's not completed, then it won't work. Alright, so this is interesting. All these Ishvalan refugees, they, I guess, have been working in concert with Marco and Scar. Towards good ends, as it were. Things are starting to get very interesting. You know, General Grumman appears to have raised, I don't know, if I'm any judge, a couple regiments of men here. Alright, so it's interesting here. This might be the North and East joint training, but, you know, it's just coincidental that these two factions are aligned against Central Command. What else is interesting is that Wrath has decided to oversee these training exercises himself. Certainly he's not doing it out of the goodness of his heart, you know. I'm sure he has an ulterior motive, whether or not he's making that clear to anyone. Although I'm sure anyone who knows certainly knows that his presence is not a good thing by any stretch of the imagination. So back with Alphonse, it seems like he's sort of slipping into unconsciousness more and more. Yeah, this really bodes poorly for how things are going. You know, it really seems like Alphonse is on the verge of just sort of like slipping out of his armored body and dying altogether. And you know, if that weren't bad enough, Gluttony has decided to show up. So, you know, I'm sure on a good day, Alphonse would have no problem fighting Gluttony, but given how he's been sort of passing out, sort of like quasi-dying, I guess, you know, he's not in good condition. And what's worse, Pride is also there. You know, elephants could handle gluttony, but pride is monumentally more dangerous. And, you know, it really doesn't help that Alphonse is still sort of, like, passing out all the time. It really makes it much easier for Pride to sort of restrain him and take him hostage. Oh, dear. So, you know, you have to wonder, based on what he's saying, Pride, that is, if he's sort of behind this whole fainting business. You know, you sit tight, Alphonse, we'll wake you on the promised day. Really seems like he has some marginal amount of control over things. They really are like fire and ice, Mustang and General Armstrong. You know, Mustang's being nothing but polite and mildly flirtatious, and General Armstrong's just sort of like, yeah, whatever. Now, I do find it interesting that Mustang is sort of like, you know, hey, this is a big mansion, you could hide a battalion here, wink wink, nudge nudge. You know, surely that's not going to become a plot point later. It is rather harsh of the Major General to say that she prefers that Mustang inherit her estate than it be passed down to Major Armstrong. Like, the Major's not a bad guy. I mean, obviously he doesn't live up to her standards. But at the same time, oh, Mustang, he couldn't help himself. He delivered an important message, you know, Selim Bradley's a homunculus. He gave the Major General some Armstrongs that represent femininity and ladylike grace. You know, couldn't have shared him with a more incongruous person, and naturally she takes that as a slight. I feel like he's poking a bear that's better left unpoked, especially considering that their whole coalition is not especially strong. Like, I wouldn't call it fractious, but, you know, they have enough problems as it is without causing infighting. So it seems like, back at the joint exercise, things are a little bit dicey. Major Miles is now aware that Alphonse is sort of missing in action, and he can really only assume that this is not a good thing. Okay, so it seems like Wrath and his cohort are somewhat aware of what's going on. You know, the joint exercise was a diversion, and then, you know, Ishvalan terrorists, quote-unquote, would invade Central, after which the joint exercise would move in and seemingly suppress them, but really join forces. So, you know, that's a pretty plausible plan. But at the same time, I feel like General Grumman is a bit more cunning than to just sort of leave the planet something like this. Because, you know, Mustang referred to him pretty consistently as that old fox. So I feel like he's got something else up his sleeve. You know, not that he necessarily leaked this plan, but I feel like, you know, maybe he wasn't hiding this plan as rigorously as he might be hiding the true details of what he's planning. So whether this is part of the plan or not, I feel like Rath's train being stuck on a trestle bridge above a river, that's not a particularly good place to be. And now that the engine is decoupled and moved on, you know, it seems like this is in fact part of a trap. Well, that's it then, right? You know, Rath is surely dead. You know, his train car was blown up. All the wreckage presumably fell into the river below, you know. That's it then. You know, homunculus or not, surely he couldn't survive something like that, right? So this is a bad day for all the traitors. You know, they've been set up pretty rigorously. Oh, that old fox. So here we go, a little reunion between old comrades, you know, now that things are really popping off with the promised day tomorrow. It only makes sense for them to reunite and begin working together again. So unfortunately, this whole news of Rath being killed is really rippling everywhere. The responses are somewhere between, like, disbelief and outright panic. It's nice that Major General Armstrong is there to sort of, I guess, keep track on everyone and enjoy the panic. But at the same time, Father has decided to show up, and presumably, he will take the helm. Given that he's the mastermind behind everything anyways. Rath was merely a figurehead, after all. Alright, well that's it for this episode. If you've enjoyed it, then by all means, tune in for the next one. See you, Space Cowboy.